Susan Barclay, an activist with the International Solidarity Movement, the ISM, active on the ground in the occupied territories, recently experienced the crackdown of Israeli authorities on the hundreds of international activists in the occupied territories, organizing in solidarity with the Palestinian resistance to the Israeli occupation. Susan has been active on the ground, participating in campaigns and actions with the ISM for some time, and recently Israeli authorities attempted to deport her back to the United States for no other reason than her solidarity organizing with the Palestinian people. I spoke to Susan about her recent arrest and the unsuccessful deportation attempt by the Israeli state. Could you speak about what went down for you? There was an attempted deportation. What was the context in which this was happening in terms of the ISM's work and in terms of the work that you were doing?
In terms of my work, I think, and the International Solidarity Movement, I've been primarily in Nablus, and I've been there for about 8 months, and have been working with a lot of internationals and Palestinians for exactly what you said, nonviolent resistance against the Israeli occupation. And that's been a lot of different things, roadblock removals and demonstrations, breaking curfew, which is 24-hour-a-day house imprisonment, and doing a lot of accompaniment of people, of civilians who are attempting to carry out their daily lives amidst tanks and shooting. And we did a lot of things for students, attempting to get students to and from school safely without having to face shooting and threats. And Palestinians are in Nablus resisting immensely nonviolently. And it is one of the only cities, in fact, the only city that I have yet heard of that has a political coalition of every single party, including Islamic Jihad and Hamas, to organize uniquely nonviolent resistance. And so it's a pretty phenomenal place right now for nonviolent resistance and for basically just being in a city where the people are determined to continue to live and to go to the market and to go to school and to find the work, whatever work it is they can find, whatever way they can support their families. So I've been one of the people, obviously, taking a very active part in this. And you're entirely right. It was without doubt for these reasons that I was taken. Because when I arrived at the checkpoint, we had a taxi waiting for us on the other side, and we had to make a very difficult decision. I was with another international to not intervene in anything or ask even any questions about why the Palestinians were waiting, et cetera, because we were under this time pressure. And so we walked up to the checkpoint without saying anything more than, "Hello, how are you?" And immediately upon seeing my driver's license, I was informed that there was a problem, that I was going to have to wait. They asked to see my passport. And then we were detained for approximately 2 hours at the military base until the border police came. And at which time, when they came, they told me, "Your visa is expired." And I explained that I was in an extension process at the Ministry of Interior. And they said, "Well, you're going to have to come with us because basically you're an illegal immigrant. Your visa's expired." And I showed a receipt I had from the application, and it didn't change anything. They decided we needed to go, myself and Robin, to Ariel Police Station. When we did go there, I was interrogated, and during my interrogation, Robin was released. And during my interrogation, during which I kept repeating that I would answer their questions, but only once my lawyer was present, the interrogator, Ami, actually spoke to my lawyer on the phone, who said he was on his way coming, and Ami did not care. He refused any amount of money for my bail, for my release, and he also made it very clear to my lawyer and to myself that I was going to be arrested no matter what. And he made a number of phone calls, one of which he said was to someone in the Ministry of Interior who told him that my request had been denied. And I asked, "Well, isn't the normal process that you would inform a person that the application had been denied and then give them a period of time to leave the country. And he didn't answer that question, but just said, started to read me some of my rights and then told me that my non-cooperation could be used against me. And then I was arrested. He told me that when I was walking downstairs and picked up my phone to make a phone call, he said, oh yeah, by the way, you're arrested now, you can't make any more phone calls. When my lawyer came, he did get there after Ami had left and after I'd been strip searched. All my things had been searched, and he told me that there this was an unlawful arrest, and that I was going to, they would not accept anything to release me, that they definitely had orders from above to take me, and I was advised to go, of course, and not answer any questions the next morning when I had a visit from people from the Minister of Interior, which he told me I would have, and Ami had also told me they would come early to see me. So I was transported to Hadera Prison, which is a women's prison north of Tel Aviv, and got there, was searched again, had my jewelry and money and a few other things, my phone's confiscated, and then was shown a bed in a room. And the really next important piece was that I had a hearing before a judge on Tuesday. That was early Friday morning, the 21st of February. On Tuesday, the 25th, I had a hearing with a judge, and a lawyer represented me and told me before the hearing that there were two issues. There was the issue of my deportation order, which the two gentlemen who visited me from the Ministry of Interior had stamped and given me, although I had refused to sign it. That there was that, and that needed to be dealt with, and we were going to try to cancel it. And then there was the issue of actually my imprisonment, which was what the hearing was for. So in the hearing, the judge decided to release me on a number of conditions, and those were 15,000 shekels bail and residing at a specific address in Jerusalem, a plane ticket to the United States, and checking in at a police station twice a week in Jerusalem. And my lawyers left telling me, basically, that the Ministry of Interior had 24 hours to appeal the decision the judge made. The next day was Wednesday, and I was informed an hour before I was due to be released by Ellie, a police officer at Hadera. He told me, it has been appealed, and you will not be free. And I said, that's fine. My lawyers told me that was a possibility, and they'll appeal again. And I didn't hear anything until the next day, Thursday, the 27th of February at 7 p.m. I was called downstairs and told by police officers that I was going home, which means, based on the nights before and the other women that had left the prison, that means that you're going to be deported. And so I was told to be ready by 9 or 10 that night. And I did get my things together and started reading. And I was, a police officer, a policewoman came to my room at about 9:45 and said, it's time to go. And I was escorted out to an unmarked police van and driven to Ben-Gurion Airport to the detention center, a kind of warehouse for all those who are being deported. I arrived there at about 11, and I went through airport security. I did say when I began resisting at this point in time, they had to physically remove me from the van. And I did say to all the police officers, what kind of democracy is this? I am in a legal process. I am appealing a deportation order, and you are attempting now just to simply deport me. And no one responded to anything I said. They put me through airport security, and then I was in a larger area with at least one police officer at all times for about 5 hours, from midnight until about 5:15 in the morning. And during that time, I discovered that I was flying out on a KLM flight to Seattle via Amsterdam. And I asked who paid for this ticket? I said, is this a gift from the State of Israel? And the police officer said, yes. And at about 5:15, I was called to go and escorted out to another police van and driven to the airplane, to the KLM flight. And they waited until 5:25 to let me, to open the door and get me out of the van. And then I was escorted up the stairs to the door of the airplane. And the police officer left at that point. And I stepped in the flight and told the three flight attendants immediately that I was being put on the plane against my will and that I had no intention of cooperating anyway, that I was not going to be sitting down, I was not going to be putting on my seatbelt or turning off my electronic devices. And I said that I would go so far as screaming and yelling, and that the faster they got me off the flight, the less problems they would have. And immediately, one flight attendant was quite upset and said, you just can't fly then. Oh, my gosh, you're going to delay the flight. And made a phone call to another flight attendant who then asked me to come speak directly to the pilot. So I spoke to the pilot, and he, as well as one other flight attendant, actually inquired as to why I wanted to do this or why I was doing this, and I explained that I was being denied a legal process, and I felt very strongly about the right to that legal process, and that the only way for me to continue fighting that deportation order was to get off the plane. And so he said, well, how do I do that? How do I get back a hold of the police? What can I do? I said, call the police and tell them that you won't fly with me on the plane. So the police were called back, and they tried their absolute best at that point in time to convince me in any way possible to get on the flight. They said I was not being deported, that I was going on my own free will, which I contested, obviously, and said that there was no stamp in my passport, there was no record of this in the computer, et cetera. And I said, absolutely not. I want to see my lawyer. And then they said, look, we're being nice. Be clever now. Get on the plane. If you don't get on the plane now, we'll fly you on the next plane, and we'll put you in handcuffs, and we'll put a police officer next to you with a gun. And I said, that's fine. And at this point, they were going, continuing to try to convince me, and the flight crew was shutting the door, and the stairs were being pulled away, and we were just being slowly pushed back off the stairs until they could do nothing else but put me in the police van and drive me back to the detention area, and then made a few phone calls, and I was transported back to Hadera, the prison. I went to, gave my things again, had to turn over my cell phones and my jewelry, et cetera, and climbed back into bed at about 7:15 in the morning and slept until 11:30 when a policewoman woke me up and said, you're going to walk, you're going to be free. And I did not believe it at all. And then I was called downstairs to about an hour or so later to take my jewelry back. And I was, at that point in time, allowed to make a phone call to ask someone to pick me up, which is really the first time that I thought this might actually be for real. And I was thinking that because they knew I was non-cooperative, that they were going to try to drive me potentially to the Jordanian border or somehow put me on another flight, potentially something else. And I ended up being released at about 1:30 on Friday, and saw my lawyer immediately. And he said it's a number of things, which I've subsequently discovered now, is that there certainly was never any appeal from the Ministry of Interior that I was lied to by Ellie, and that the original conditions for my release were fulfilled on Friday, and that's how I was released. And when an inquiry was made by a lawyer, they said there is no appeal. And then additionally, there is no warrant for my arrest. So it was people at rest. And I think really the important part of it is exactly what we were talking about before. It's something so clearly the soldier who in the very beginning detained us, when he found out the police said, you know, it's a visa issue, he said, none of us in Nablus knew about your visa, Susan. So it's very clear, I think, in my specific case, that this was a setup and that the Shabak is definitely involved somewhere, that they decided because of my political activities here and the work that we have been doing with Palestinians, they needed to get me out. And there are a number of really exceptional things, such as including paying for my ticket in less than a week when I was in prison with women who are waiting sometimes a month or 2 months to find funds to pay their ticket out. There's a lot of things that show that they really targeted someone and wanted to get me out of the country as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at now. I will file a civil suit against the State of Israel for damages for unlawfully arresting me and then lying about the appeal and attempting to deport me. Then I am also fighting the deportation order. I want it to be canceled. And they did stamp my passport, Ben Gurion exit, and then crossed through that with a blue pen and wrote in Hebrew, deported. So that I also want dealt with. That's where I'm at right now legally. And personally, I'm just so incredibly happy to be out and so thankful for all the people who did so much of the support work to get me out, and hope that it can be that this example and my arrest just exposes the State of Israel and their practices around international peace activists that are completely nonviolent, that are working to encourage nonviolent resistance and intervening in human rights abuses. And that obviously what we are witnessing, the collective punishment and the systematic destruction of infrastructure and the daily humiliation, serious, very serious human rights abuses that are going on. Obviously, they don't want people witnessing and speaking about that and working with Palestinians nonviolently to resist this illegal occupation.
That was an interview with Susan Barkley, an activist and organizer with the International Solidarity Movement, who fought and won against an illegal deportation order solely based on her political solidarity work with the ISM. The ISM engages in nonviolent direct action and civil disobedience to the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands. To get more information about the International Solidarity Movement, visit www.palsolidarity.org. To get updates and information about the situation on the ground in the occupied territories, visit www.palestine.indymedia.org or www.electronicintifada.net. This piece has been produced for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stefan Christophe.